This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, The Science of Staying Cool. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Imagine summer for a moment without air conditioning, without fans, or without electricity even. If opening the windows doesn't cool things down, you're pretty much out of options, says Rhett Allain. He's a physicist at Southeastern Louisiana State.
Try to find something to make something colder. It's pretty impossible.
He says by comparison, creating warmth around you is relatively easy. Light a fire, boil some water, rub your hands together.
I mean, if you want to mechanically set up or engineer something to make things hot, I mean, it's trivial.
Cool is complicated, and it has eluded humans for far longer than creating warmth. Jed Slayman explains why.
So at the most basic, to cool something, you can use something cool, obviously. Here's physicist Rhett Allain again.
Whenever you put two objects of different temperatures in contact, then they will transfer energy from the hotter object to the cooler object.
Ice cubes in soda, warm soda chills, got it. But think about it, there's a bit of a catch-22 buried in there. You need an initial cold thing to cool the second warm thing. That speaks to why cavemen had fire ages ago, and we've only had fridges at home for some 100 years. If you want to understand why cool is complicated, you may first have to forget what you think you know about heat.
You know, we talk about heat in ways that makes it seem like it's an actual substance that flows from one place to the other, and we even say heat flow, but it's not.
The average high this time of year hovers around 90 in Rhett's corner of Louisiana. Still, he doesn't really believe in heat, at least not the same way a lot of us think of it. He calls it a four-letter word.
Heat is a leftover term. Heat is a term from the early days of science when we didn't really have a good grasp of how everything worked. We didn't really understand the quantum mechanical properties of matter.
Instead, he thinks of heat and cold as the transfer of energy. Rhett gives me this try-at-home experiment to dispel the whole heat as a substance or flowy thing idea.
Take two water bottles and have them hot.
Fill them with hot water, and then cover one of them with a towel soaked in hot water. Which bottle cools off faster? The one you added a hot thing to, or the other that you left alone?
It turns out the one with the wet towel, even if it's like a hot wet towel, it's going to cool off faster than the other one.
Think energy transfer, not heat flow.
So the water in that towel transitions from liquid state to gas state, which takes energy. And where does it get that energy from?
It gets it from the water bottle. The effect is how sweat cools us. The fan you have blasting in your face only really works if you're sweaty, if there's something to evaporate into all that air. Another type of cooling is the fundamental behind how our fridges work. Again, you can try this at home.
So this one, you just take a rubber band and you stretch it and you hold it out stretched. And when you do that, you put it up against your lip because your lips are sensitive.
The band will feel warm because the polymers, these large molecules that make up the rubber band, are getting distorted, and that generates heat. If you keep holding it stretched out, it eventually goes back to room temperature, transferring energy to the air around it.
And now, once it's reached room temperature, you let it go back to its natural position, and you know what happens? It gets cold. And it's so awesome because you can do this yourself. You stretch the rubber band, feel it under your
leg. I tried it, and it works. The rubber band had cooled off in the stretched out state where it was supposed to be warmer. Now that it's back in its relaxed state, it gets even colder than normal because the universe still demands that energy transfer. So this energy transfer happens and has a cooling effect, but how do you capture it? Now you may be closer to understanding why it took so long to make a refrigerator. Your fridge uses gas to do this. It gets compressed, which heats it up, all the atoms bunched up, bouncing off each other. But even the compressed gas, like the stretched rubber band, eventually cools to normal. Then it's decompressed and goes down even further than normal, to fridge temperature or freezer.
It does seem like a magic trick, and that's what's so awesome about it.
But still, cooling and heating seem to be based off the same principle, energy transfer in and out of something. So why is one direction so much harder than the other?
It probably has something to do with entropy, but I don't think I've really wrapped my head around that whole problem yet.
I reached out to a low-temperature physicist to help me wrap my head around it.
My name is Roberto Ramos. I'm a professor at the University of the Sciences. I am a low-temperature physicist, and what I do is I cool matter, devices, and materials to study their quantum properties.
He told me about entropy. It's a thermodynamics term. It means disorder, randomness, and everything in nature gravitates toward it. More time passes, more entropy, messier and messier. And cool needs order.
To cool things means to put them in ordered form, and that takes work. And that's why it's harder to cool things than to warm it.
In a universe ruled by entropy, it's harder to cool something in sort of the same way it's harder to put an egg back together rather than crack one. And when Roberto says cool, he means really, really cool. Most of his research takes place below 4 Kelvin. Kelvin is a temperature scale with no negative, stopping at zero, at the bottom of temperature. 0 Kelvin is like negative 460 Fahrenheit.
From the visual point of view, if one were to try to imagine atoms, right, jiggling back and forth, vibrating back and forth, it was natural to assume that when things stopped vibrating, that would be the bottom.
The bottom, absolutely no jiggling at all, is called absolute zero. And it's theoretically impossible, thanks to something called the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. But Roberto tells me about ways to get close. A very common route is liquid helium, like the same stuff that's in birthday balloons as a gas. You find it in MRI machines. They need something called superconductivity. When certain materials get very, very cold, their electrical resistance drops away. Resistance, by the way, is what causes stuff to heat up when you run electricity through it.
We know aluminum, when you lower its temperature to about 1 degree Kelvin, all of that resistance disappears. And it's not just resistance becoming less and less. At 1 degree Kelvin, all the resistance vanishes.
That's important because MRIs, magnetic resonance imagers, use incredibly powerful magnetic fields, which take a lot of electricity. If there were normal, non-superconducting resistance at play, they'd cook patients rather than help treat them. But perhaps the most exciting thing in cold these days is what it can do for quantum computers. These things dwarf the power of current supercomputers, using atomic particles to do computation instead of digital ones and zeros. Those quantum bits, though, are very sensitive. Any little thing can throw them off.
You have to isolate the physical quantum system from the universe. And one way to do that is using cryogenics, basically ultra-low temperature physics techniques.
I asked Roberto about how cold he's been going recently in his lab.
So right now in my lab, we have a small cryo cooler that when we plug it in the electrical outlet, it can go to about 2 degrees Kelvin in about 1.5 hours. So that says that we're actually colder than outer space, and we can do that in about 1.5 hours.
Colder than outer space. But that lab isn't even the coldest. There's a bunch that go way lower.
Sometimes it's a bit mind-boggling, yes. You start thinking that maybe there are some other intelligent beings and they have produced even lower temperatures, perhaps.
That's Hakonen Pertti at the Low Temperature Lab in Helsinki. In 1999, they set the cold world record. Possibly, actually, the cold known universe record.
The smallest temperature that we have reached is around 100 picokelvin, and that's 1/10 of a billionth of degree. That's like 0.9 zeros and then one.
The process starts with liquid helium to get down to a few Kelvin, and then it gets pretty complicated. Basically, they apply and then remove powerful magnetic fields, which there's a lot of math to it, but it causes a temperature drop in certain materials. In this case, some bits of this metal, rhodium.
It's not very small. I mean, it's 2 grams of metal.
It took decades of work to get those 2 grams of metal that cold, years to even measure it after it was achieved. And there's other labs always striving to go colder, to add another zero after the decimal point. But it's not like these scientists are out here freezing things just for the sake of announcing an impressively small number.
You always want to have some kind of physical question that you want to test in the experiments. And the record temperatures, they are then byproducts of the research.
When things get very cold at the subatomic level, Petri says a kind of mask falls away.
So if you do research at room temperature, then many things are masked by the thermal motion of atoms. But when you go to very low temperatures, then you get rid of this thermal motion, and you can really study the basic properties of material.
The more scientists learn about cold, the lower they can go, the more they can uncover about the fundamental nature of everything. It's pretty cool. For The Pulse, I'm Jad Slaman.